Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. Each week, we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week, wowee, we have a pair of amazing luminaries in the podcast space, gentlemen and scholars. They are cinema files, I guess, is probably the appropriate term, but they might also be cinemaphobes in a lot of ways. Both of our guests are from a podcast called Movie of the Year on the Pop Filter Network, which you can find at yourpopfilter.com. And our first guest is a returning guest because he talked about poetry with me during the earlier part of the quarantine. That's Mike Gravano. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Nate, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to get the EGOT of pretentious white dude topics from poetry to movies.
Let's do them all. We're going to do musicals soon enough. You're going to have to prove prove that you can sing.
I cannot do that.
Well, that's even more fun. That's good content. People like to hear people not be able to sing as much as they want to hear them sing.
It's the trying. People really like to hear the blood, sweat, and tears.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, just if we can squeeze audibly into the microphone, get some real Foley work going, juicy. Well, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being on. How have you been?
I have been, like everybody else, exactly the same. Every day is exactly the same, which yeah. I guess a good vanilla neutral.
Do you feel like it's exactly the same almost makes us more like dogs than we were before, in that a dog gets up, eats the same bowl of food, naps at pretty much the same time, goes to the bathroom at the same times, and then just looks forward to slight changes?
Yeah, I've been watching my dog and how happy she is during all this. So I've just been starting to do the same thing she is when she's doing it. So I sprint when she sprints, I piss when she pisses, I nap when she naps, which means I'm rocking like a solid 17 hours of sleep a day.
That's great. Plus, everything in your neighborhood is well marked and belongs to you now.
I own it all, and nobody cleans up my poop.
Our other guest, also from the Movie of the Year podcast, is Ryan Haley. Ryan, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on.
I did not know that Mike was going to be on this one too.
This is embarrassing.
I was excited to finally do a podcast that does not include him. And then also just found out that this is a competitive show and he has done one before. So that seems a little unfair.
Yeah, plus you guys are both wearing the same baby blue Banana Republic jumper, which is a fashion faux pas.
Yes. That actually was planned. We said that we were both going to wear this at the same time tonight. We just didn't know we'd be together.
Yeah, we thought separately to ruin other people's evenings.
That's my fault for sending the invitations with separate fonts on separate kinds of cardstock.
It is classy. That's the classiest way I've ever been invited to a podcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
embossed. How much did the embossment cost?
Oh, I mean, it was like $1,000. I am going to have to lose my house.
Yeah, you need a better emboss guy. I'll hook you up.
So, yeah, Ryan, welcome to the show. How have you been?
I've been okay. Same as Mike. I follow his dog around and just literally do all the same things that Mike does. The every day the same thing is catching up. Yesterday, for instance, my wife and I got a text at the same time from my mom saying happy anniversary. And my wife and I looked at each other and just went, oh, shit. We both forgot. Neither one of us think about days or months or anything. And we both missed our wedding anniversary.
Oh, man. But what a blessing that you both missed it.
Yes. It's very important to either both remember or both forget.
Yeah,
because you're stuck in a sitcom scenario.
Exactly. We got to circumvent these tropes that are so just toxic to husbands. You know what I'm saying? Haven't husbands suffered enough?
Yes. With these nagging ass wives. Oh, come on. Let me just be fat while you're super hot.
Let's let the record show that I am fat and my wife is super hot. And then also after we forgot the anniversary, we divided the house in half. We painted a white line down the middle and then we got in an elevator and she gave birth. So it was an exciting day.
That's a day. I could understand why you forgot your anniversary.
Studio audience loved it.
Well, yeah, Ryan, welcome to the show. So we're going to talk about something very exciting and something very important to the both of you, which is movies. And also... Yes. The podcast that you both are on, Movie of the Year, which I would love for you to take a moment to talk about because I'd normally put this in the plug section, but you guys need to tell our listeners about the show because I think they'd like it.
Do you want to do every other word?
Of course.
Okay.
Every?
So what we found out was that basically, we just decided that like the Oscars are terrible, and there's a lot of reasons for that. Old-fashioned and make stupid decisions. But part of it too is it's really hard to have 2 weeks of like think time and then just announce a winner. And so what we wanted to do is we wanted to go back and redo years from the past with all of like all this time to look at them and how they've aged and what's important now as opposed to then.
Yeah, I pitched doing years from the future, and Ryan told me he wouldn't do it. That it was apparently could not be done.
But no matter what year we did in the future, Mike wanted Fast and Furious blank to win, and so it just got kind of boring.
Ryan, well, you know what came out in 2001?
The Fast and the Furious, Mike?
Hell yeah, baby!
Well, right on. Yeah, I mean, I encourage all of our listeners to check out this show. It's phenomenal. It's very funny. You guys are all great. You know, Taylor's fine. No, yeah. I don't know. I'm just getting in on the inside jokes here. They make fun of Taylor, who is on their show sometimes, but not all the time. But yeah, it's a phenomenal show. And I think you do a great job of breaking down the films that you're talking about while, you know, addressing them in a past context and a current context. And yeah, it's a blast to listen to. So thank you for doing it.
Of course. It's, you know, our pleasure and sacrifice. But Nate, I think that you're definitely getting in on it because don't try to figure out why we make fun of Taylor. Don't try to understand. No. Just make fun of Taylor. Just yeah. Bottom line is just make fun of him.
If you're going to listen and realize he's the best of us as a human being, then you'll be on his side and it won't. So just don't put any thought into it. Just realize, fuck Taylor.
Yeah. My assumption is that he's extremely handsome and probably has a huge hog, and that's most of the problem anyway. So
one of those things is true.
Well, hey, let's get started talking about movies. And I'm going to start with the opening question. And Mike, we'll start with you. You're both going to get a crack at this very same question. So Mike, since you guys have a really good movie podcast, if there was a film adaptation of your podcast, who would play each of you? So that would be you, Ryan, Greg, and if you want to include Taylor, you can.
Yeah,
and there's a bonus
Rick
after
Moranis
that.
Role. Sure. Okay, so who would play? What year is this movie coming out? That is important.
Whenever. You decide. Yeah, I want you to give it. Can be an all-time whenever lineup of people who would be in this
just
movie.
People who have been in cinema forever. So one of us could be the train. That train that the audience thought was real.
Sure.
Okay, I think I'm going to start with Greg, who is very kindly, but when he's mean, it hurts so much. He's in control, even though nobody understands why often. I'm going to go with Kevin Klein, late 90s Kevin Klein for Greg. Ryan is a real, how do you describe Ryan kindly? How would you describe yourself kindly?
I would just say that I'm very kind, and that is only outmatched by my outwit and out-survive. I'm basically like the show Survivor, I guess.
Yeah, okay, so that was the meanest thing anybody said about you, is somehow you're still around even though everybody thought you died years ago. I think, yeah, he's a real pop-off even though he's not tough at all. Everything hurts until you think about what he said, and then you're like, oh, that was dumb. He just talks fast. I'm going to say the guy who played Ziggy on The Wire and then was the pimp in Tangerine.
Wow. Okay.
And then I don't think this, just who I've been compared to. I'm funny. I'm charming. I got married on a plantation. I'm sorry about that. I'm Ryan Reynolds. And then I think Taylor is Rick Moranis.
Okay. Very good. All right. Ryan, what do you think? Yeah. Who's the cast in your movie of the year movie?
Well, I do agree with all of Mike's assessments of Greg. He's typically the host, and he does, you know, he's nice until you piss him off and then he goes crazy. And so I am going to say Mama Fratelli from the Goonies. they look the same, they talk the same. What a crazy pair.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's hard to do yourself, but I sort of have always seen myself as a young Tay Diggs, and that's, if we could go back in time and cast, like, Save the Last Dance era Tay Diggs as me, I think that would be the best. And then for Mike's an interesting one. For Mike, I don't know, go through all my movie knowledge. I would say that Mike would be played by Sickle Cell Anemia. That's basically the vibe that he gives off to me.
Just a congenital blood disease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of pretentious fucks say New York is like another character in movies, but what people don't realize is Sickle Cell is actually a character in most of our movies, the unseen character.
It's true. It's true.
And then for Taylor, who would play Taylor? It's Mike. I would have Mike step in and play Taylor against.
Oh,
all
that's
of
the meanest. I would do such a good bad Taylor.
I like that stunt cast though. That's a lot of fun.
It's an Easter egg.
The fans will love it.
Yeah, because you'll know who's really a fan and who isn't. They're gonna go, oh, hey, you guys don't get it, but that's Mike. He's actually Mike from the.
And I'm method, so I'm gonna stay awake for 3 weeks just to get those sunken in eyes Taylor's famous for.
Jesus, okay, we're hitting hard right now.
Wow, great. I'm gonna throw a bonus question at both of you. So, who would play Drop Pad in this movie, Mike?
Oh, Megatron, the only serviceable part of those Transformers movies, because it's a robotic tyrant with a horrible voice.
Who isn't in any way a gross racial stereotype?
Is Megatron that?
All the other characters in those Transformer movies are.
Yes, I thought you were very kindly letting me know I was being racist right there. Just against robots.
Yeah. Robosexual. Ryan, who would play Drop Pad?
I'm going to pick the person who I have seen perform the most in real life throughout the course of my life. Someone who can basically become anything or anyone at the drop of a hat, at the drop pad of a hat. It's Weird Al Yankovic, I think, would come in and he would be the drop pad.
Wow. Yeah, I like that because Drop Pad is always making references to pop culture things, mm-hmm. like the game Sunset Riders, for instance. And doing so with such fresh aplomb that everyone's like, oh, I got to figure out a way to say bury me with my money, but like marry me with my honey. And that's a very Weird Al thing. So
that's
a
classic satire right there.
Yeah. Yeah. This is high art. Very good. Great job on the opening question. Mike, I'm going to give you 4 points. And Ryan, yes. I'm going to give you 5 points.
Shit.
And now we're going to start with round number one. And Ryan, do you have a vague idea about cinema verite?
I do, I think, right, guys?
Yeah, I think you do.
Yeah,
on our show, you totally do. I don't know here without your support system, but I'd say Ryan has a vague idea about cinema verite.
All right, Ryan, talk about it. Tell us what you know.
I think cinema verite is sort of when you're a kid, what you're so scared of watching. Sort of it's the kind of thing where like, just Transformers for me, please. And then as you get older, you wish that Transformers were in more cinema verite. And then becoming an adult, it's sort of the only type of movie that makes you feel alive and not wish that, you know, you had the courage to kill yourself and your family all at the same time. So we're talking about just, you know, like the artsy fartsy stuff that everybody makes fun of is how I would describe it.
Okay, great. Very good. Mike, what can you add about cinema verite?
It's in a different language. Cinema verite is not an English phrase, for those of you who don't know. I believe it is Italian and or French.
It is one of those, yes. Very good. Also,
Mike, if you take off your glasses while you're answering, we won't be able to see your computer screen Googling what the answer is.
I was trying to type as calmly as possible so you wouldn't hear the clicky clack. No, in my head, yeah, it's the truthiness in movies. If I gun to my head had to think about cinema verite type movies, I would say things like Umberto D and The Bicycle Thieves could be way wrong because Bicycle Thieves does have a lot of old-timey action in it, but it's just like these are real-ass people with dealing with real-ass things.
Lots of Bicycle Thief has a lot of like, I'm going to get you a copper, and then there's a shootout on rooftops.
Exactly. But with bicycles.
Yeah, just people shooting bicycles at one another with trebuchets. That's the only way to do it. Yeah, great. Very good. Very good. So yeah, cinema verite it's French. It is, it's a style of documentary filmmaking invented by Jean Rauch that is basically around the idea that you're using the camera to reveal the truth. So you're going to be doing improvisation with how you use the camera, as well as improvisation with the ways that you interview people. And it overlaps with standard movie making in that there are several films like The Bicycle Thief, like Medium Cool, which I don't know if, have you guys seen that? That's a movie from the 70s, but they filmed it during the Chicago Democratic National Convention where the riot broke out. And so the latter half of the movie is the cameraman running through the crowd with the actors pretending to be characters, but they are running through the actual riot that's occurring during the post-convention situation. So it's the idea that that film should reveal truth, not just project reality onto the viewer. So
which is very, like, what a dream for a documentarian or any filmmaker to be like, eh, this movie's okay. And then all of a sudden a riot breaks out and you're like, sweet, yes, I love riots. Yeah. Get out there, do this.
Now we have a plot, baby.
Yeah, that's, I recommend that movie a lot. I think I watched it in college in a film class, but it's really interesting when you put yourself in the context of, especially being an adult who we've all experienced some form of protest and or manifestation rioting that's gone on over the last 6 months, and to imagine being in the thick of that and trying to, one, portray a character, and two, like, hold together a concept of a movie that you thought you were making, and then find out, oh no, this is going to turn into something else. It's a wild idea.
It's very similar to my favorite version of Cinema Verite, which is the American remake of Fever Pitch, where Jimmy Fallon got to run out when the Red Sox actually won the World Series and then included that in the movie. Like, how true is that, guys? Fallon right there, you know?
That's the truest he's ever been.
And what's funnier than using the word pitch, which is a soccer field, and turning it into a baseball thing, because Americans will never get behind soccer under any circumstances.
Well, baseball players pitch too.
They do. Yeah, no, I know.
They have that pitch.
I think it would be better if it was about, if Jimmy Fallon were a film exec and he was just trying to pitch a movie. And that was
had a 106 degree fever. He's just very sweaty and a little hallucinatory while he's trying to pitch.
I honestly don't even remember right now, guys, if it was Jimmy Fallon or Justin Long. That's the same person, right?
But one I really have warm feelings towards, and one I really do not.
I don't know which one is which.
Should we leave that a mystery? Probably.
Let's leave it a mystery. I love
never
Justin
ask
Long.
Him.
great job on Cinema Verite. Mike, I'm going to give you 2 points. Ryan, 1 point. And it's time for round number two. Mike, do you have a vague idea about the Twilight Zone, the movie accident?
Okay. Totally.
Talk about it.
Rod Sterling. Very famous, right? Very successful with the Twilight Zone, the show. And so they're like, make a movie, bro. And he started to. And in the middle
I'm so sorry, Nate. Can I do this? It's Rod Stewart. Keep going.
No. That's the guy from Faces. Ooh la la.
His most famous work, Faces. Good job.
That's when he was good. I don't like the if you want I'm sexy. And then in the middle of making this movie, he realized... the most ironic thing he could think of was if he never finished his script and then he tripped and hurt his nose.
I like that. I like the idea that he realized that he had been dead for like 20 years and he realized the irony of that. How have I kept working? Because that's very Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah. How has he kept working? It's the Twilight Zone, bro. Like, lots of crazy shit happened.
You invented this, man.
Yeah. This is
time
and space. Very good, Mike. Ryan, the Twilight Zone, the movie accident.
If I'm going to get on my own dumb shit, I'm going to say the first accident was thinking that it was a good idea. Come on, guys, get the fuck out of here.
Oh!
But the one you may be referring to, Nate, is the one where I think one of the four directors was John Landis, who I love, who I grew up with, right? Directed the Blues Brothers, so therefore Hall of Famer. He was like, what, fucking movies? I don't give a shit. Safety? I don't give a shit. I want you guys to throw a helicopter at that old man and those children as hard as you can. And they did, and they died.
That's absolutely right, Ryan. Very good. In 1982, so the Twilight Zone the movie came out in 1982. During filming, John Landis's segment featured character actor Vic Morrow was portraying a guy who was like a racist. That was basically his character turn, but he was being thrown back in time to the Vietnam War. He had to save these two Vietnamese kids to realize that he's racist because he's been saying awful stuff about people of Asian descent. And
like,
so,
what did he say? Just to quote, what did he say?
Well, I don't have the script here with me, but I think we can all use our imaginations.
Oh my God. I can't believe Nate made me think those words.
but there was this huge helicopter stunt. The helicopter was supposed to crash. And Vic Morrow was supposed to save the two children, these two child actors who, by the way, were not following the child labor laws in Hollywood because they were kind of like, they were skirting everything they could skirt.
Well, hold on. The kids weren't following them.
Yeah,
well,
no, yeah, I agree. Blame me,
yeah.
Man.
No, 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 yeah, that's Good catch. Good catch. I'm going to give myself negative 1 points for that.
But yeah, I like the idea of John Landis just begging these two superstar kids. No, the laws. We have to remember the laws.
Oh, like, the laws are like, throw that helicopter straight at my face.
I am an actor. But yeah, so they force these two child actors to do this stunt. The pyrotechnics and all these things are way poorly designed. The helicopter crashes. The helicopter blade breaks off of the rotor during the explosion in the helicopter crash. It decapitates Vic Morrow, and these two kids are killed in the fiery explosion.
Killed from the head, right? The head shoots off so hard.
Yeah. I think it was a real billiard situation. But yeah, so and then pretty much, they found out that Landis had violated child labor laws for having a 7 and 6 year old actor work without permits. And then he didn't work for a while after that.
Yeah.
For good reason, I think.
He had a shitty son who also isn't working for a while right now.
Yeah.
Great also, dynasty, that family.
As good as the Dynasty reboot on Netflix. Great job. Ryan, I'm going to give you 2 points. And Mike, 0 points.
What?
I know.
I didn't know that could be done. You said good job when neither of us knew what Cinema Verite was. So I thought this was just easy street of a show.
I don't have any control. The points hand themselves out. I am just a conduit. I'm like Celine Dion to the music. I don't sing. It just happens through me. I'm in.
Hold on. A points medium. Is this show a drop pad situation? Are like all of our podcasts getting taken over by these robots awarding humans points?
Yes.
We should be out there awarding robots points.
Yeah. It's good. Now they think we're used to it. And then in 5 years, we're like, I got to do what the robot tells me because it's just so ingrained at that point.
And I want those points.
Oh, I think we've been tapping too many robot screens lately. They think that we approve of them because we're praising them. We keep giving them the robot equivalent of pets. It's dangerous stuff.
Ew, I don't like this.
Yeah, I know. It's time for our first game. It's time to play Fuck, Marry, Kill. And we're going to play Fuck, Marry, Kill in the Movie of the Year edition. So, Ryan, we'll start with you. You have a choice between 3 of the movies of the year from previous seasons of your show. So you have to tell me which you would fuck, which you would marry, and which you would kill between Eyes Wide Shut, Die Hard, and L.A. Confidential.
Ah, no. No. Okay. I should obviously fuck Eyes Wide Shut, but I'm not going to. I think I'm going to kill Eyes Wide Shut. I am going to... fuck Die Hard because of the pickup line. Come out to the coast, have some laughs. And I did, and we did, and we did together. And I think I'm going to marry LA Confidential because although I don't know if it's the best of those 3 movies, it's the one you can bring home to mom. Like, it's, you know, it takes place in the 40s, and my mom, who I guess takes place in the 40s, let's say, she's like, oh, what a classy movie. You know, no one can, like, argue against LA Confidential. But... except for me, who's upstairs fucking Die Hard in the bathroom while LA Confidential is flirting with my stepdad.
Just pouring another scotch.
If I know LA Confidential, you are going to get the shit kicked out of you later that night.
And Eyes Wide Shut, sorry, bro. You don't know what Fidelio means. So I'm just going to kill you instead of fuck you.
Fidelio.
I mean, there are concerns about getting into any sort of marital situation where Kevin Spacey is involved. But I get it.
That is true. That's a good point.
Yeah, great. Mike, what are you going to do? Yeah, same movies.
Okay. I think I will be different than Ryan. I do think I will marry Die Hard because it's just so charming. Sure, there's rough patches, but all your friends are going to get along with it. They're going to love it. Even the bad parts are good. One of the best villains, and you want that in a marriage. And then I'm going to... it's creepy, it's mask wearing, it's kind of antiseptic at times, but I want to have giant, weird, Eyes Wide Shut sex, so I'm fucking them and killing LA Confidential because, I'll use the person I forgot was in that movie because I blocked it out, Kevin Spacey, for my reasoning.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, I think the bottom line here is you have to marry Die Hard simply because every Christmas is special in a way that is secular and based on like individual grit, you know, because we're all hardcore libertarians on in this group of the 3 of us right now, and we believe in take your shoes off and walk through that glass.
Yeah, and that's the every Christmas, that's how we start the morning, is the kids actually break Christmas ornaments and put it in front of the parents' doorstep, and that's how we walk out.
Yeah, I mean, you earn your presents. You don't get them. Like, make it to under the tree, and you can open whatever you find there.
Mike, you celebrate in sort of a half Die Hard, half Home Alone sort of way, right?
Yeah. So. Well, I think if Die Hard is the best Christmas movie, Home Alone is the best Die Hard movie.
I wish that they would do that. That would be good. I would like someone to play little kid John McClane being Home Alone. That's phenomenal.
The kid's name from Home Alone's name is Home Alone. The guy from Die Hard's name is Die Hard. That is how we should refer to them.
Please, little, Mr. Die Hard was my father.
You can call me
Die Hard with a vengeance.
Yes.
Great job on Fuck, Marry, Kill. Mike, I'm going to give you 4 points, and Ryan, 3 points.
Insanity.
I know, it's all over the board. It's a real white-knuckle contest. So now we're going to go into round number 3. And Mike, do you have a vague idea about the Canon Group Incorporated?
The Canon Group Incorporated, of course. I don't know. Are people allowed to just say no on the show? No, of course, the Canon Group Incorporated, it was a... spun out of Del Close, like so many of our great groups did. And they started making B-movie, Corman-esque type films in the 80s. A lot of rubber costumes, a lot of giant bugs, a lot of damsels in distress holding laser weapons. Cult classics, if you see them, you love them, or you don't. They were truly the Tromeo of their day.
Very good. Very wow. good. Yeah. Ryan, anything you can add about the Canon Group?
That was clearly cheating. I don't know how he did that, because I just assume Mike has no previous knowledge anytime he starts a conversation. It's all new from here, baby. I do think he's right. I'm just trying to think of, and I know that I've seen the logo a billion times. I'm just trying to think of like what it's attached to and not get it confused with like Orion or some other thing that only made like cheap, shitty movies that I liked. I want to say Garbage Pail Kids, the movie. I want to say Santa Claus, the movie. I want to say anything that is something colon the movie. So nervous were they that people would not understand that it was even a movie.
What
they
included medium the word, is this?
The movie in the title. I can't remember anything specific. Monster Squad, maybe? It was never like...
Dare.
But like you understand, Mike, that the Goonies is like, you know, sub-level... Or Monster Squad is sub-level Goonies, so that's kind of where Canon came up, and they were like, oh, what'd you guys have an idea last year? We'll do it this year.
Asylum style.
Asylum style, yes. But there's like more creative titles, because Asylum would just call the Goonies like the Goonaries.
The Boonies.
Yeah. We're the Goonies, but we're in a toilet this time instead of being gremlins. That's what we got for you.
Critters?
Yeah.
That could be one.
That could be one.
Yeah, I mean, okay. You both did great because, yes, Canon Films is the Canon Group is a B-movie staple. Lots and lots of movies. Death Wish, the sequels to Death Wish, not the original Death Wish.
they couldn't even get Death Wish 1.
The fourth Superman movie was done by Canon, by the
Quest
Canon
for
Group.
Peace?
Yes. You had various films like Breakin' and Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, which has spawned a hard right wing militia group, right? Because Boogaloo's fun.
Oh yeah.
Now. You also had American Ninja. You had the film Life Force with Patrick Stewart, which if you guys haven't seen that, that's worth checking out. Just a lot of funky B movie stuff, and the Sylvester Stallone joint Cobra, that is notorious for him trying to get the novel that the movie was based on changed to be by him after the movie came out, because he felt like he contributed so much to the content as a whole that he deserved to be author of the book.
That's a baller move.
The novel that came out before the movie?
Yeah. 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 He based them, it's like a gritty, like drug cop movie.
Sure.
And
Sylvester Stallone.
So he writes the script, because Sly writes most of his movies, which is amazing, but writes this movie, makes the movie. It's the movie he made instead of making Beverly Hills Cop, as far as I understand. So he then went back and said, oh, well, you know, nobody's going to buy Cobra because of you, guy who wrote Cobra. They're going to buy it because I was in the movie Cobra. So I'm the author of the novel now.
I think Cobra, yeah. And I'll never watch Cobra because I'm a I support G.I. Joe, so I'm not touching that shit. But I think Cobra is the movie that gave us the gif where somebody sneaks into a kitchen about to kill an old woman who's like digging in her fridge and then taps the old woman on the shoulders and the woman turns around and it's Sly in a wig.
Yeah.
And then he shoots the guy who tapped on his shoulder.
I want to watch this now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. And also, yeah, Ryan, I'm going to give you an extra point because the Canon group logo, which I'm going to try to hold it up to the camera. I don't know if you guys can see it. It does look remarkably like the Orion logo. It's very similar in that, you know, it's grabbing that metallic blue sort of situation. It's a continuous shape, you know, whatever. It could be used to take over the world. So yeah, 2 points for each of you on round number 3. And now for round number 4, Ryan, we'll start with you. Do you have a vague idea about Slim Pickens?
I do. my family was poor, and it's all we had to eat. Is this what you mean?
No symbol. So poor you don't get the symbol.
Okay, so Slim Pickens is, I don't know, star of 2 of my favorite comedy scenes of all time. He is the guy who rode on the bomb at the end of Dr. Strangelove. And then he says some really, really terrible things in Blazing Saddles, all as a joke. Guys, it was just a comedy. But I believe that he is the one who is so tough and so mean that he is talked into singing Camp Town Races at the top of his mean, villainous lungs. Just like, what's a better way to prove what a cowboy badass you are than gently sing Camp Town Ladies sing this song, Doodah Doodah?
Well, right now we think isn't that funny he's singing that song that's not tough. But at the time, they definitely knew that that song came straight out of vaudevillian minstrel shows, and to have the racist white guy in the movie sing that song, they're just like, if you didn't get that he's the joke before, please know how racist and gross this guy. They had to edit out that after every line he went, Richard Pryor wrote this, he's my friend, please don't get mad at me.
Doodah, doodah. Doodah.
Yeah, anything with doodah on the end. It's a good way to just punctuate any sentence. Something you don't mean, something you do mean, just doodah. Mike, anything to add about Slim Pickens?
Other than those two gems, nope. I just don't. Those are the two things I know.
Just all right. Something up.
Oh, Slim Pickens. Not a lot of people know this. His birth name actually was Fat Boy Slim Pickens. And then he lost his name in a suit versus some house music endeavor.
Yeah, but we still praise him every October 16th.
As you should.
As is our faith.
I'm so sorry. I know that to be wrong. I know his true name to be Slimagar Pickensagon, and he shortened it to Slim Pickens. Sorry, I hate to call you out like that, Mike.
And, no, thank you. And if he talks never in that horrible accent, your ears will burst out and you'll die. So he has to put that accent on to cover his true powerful voice.
He can make mountains crumble.
I mean, we really have to talk about the way that people's names were Americanized at Ellis Island for a moment, because... You know, I feel like Slim Pickens is an excellent example of this. It's like, we're just going to take all of the cultural history out of everybody's names just to make them palatable, you know?
His kids had to find out they were inhuman. Like, they didn't know based on how their dad, they were raised to not even speak about that heritage while in America.
Yeah, and that's a tragedy. We have so far to go. So far to go. Great job on Slim Pickens. His real name was Lewis Burton Lindley Jr., and he was a rodeo performer, as well as becoming an actor later in his life. And yeah, you guys hit it. Dr. Strangelove, Blazing Saddles. He was also in the film 1941. And yeah, that's pretty much the long and the short of Slim. He was, you know, one of those great character actors that you have to appreciate for bringing what he brought. Because I don't know. I feel like, how do you guys feel about character actor representation in you know, contemporary cinema?
I think it's there. We just have like different kinds. We have the new wave of character actors, but I mean, Stephen Tobolowsky is still out there making stuff, but they're still there. Anytime your mom's like, he's in that other thing, but doesn't know his name. But unfortunately, people like us are burdened to know his name in filmography. Character actors.
Yeah.
I mean, that like it seems like that we now know the names of those guys.
Yeah.
In a way that like people didn't in the past, you know, like. There's Ward Bond, like a guy like that who was in every John Ford movie. Nobody knew his name, even though he was in every single one, because what are you going to do? Look it up in the 1940s
Yellow Pages?
IMDb Yellow Pages? Yeah.
Just go like, to the Library of Congress?
Go to the library, period. No one's going to do that shit, dude. It's the 40s.
Look up a microfiche? Come on.
But yeah, now we just look it up. Now we know the names of everybody. And I don't even know what it means anymore. Like, is Tom Hardy a character actor?
Well, you know, like, I think that's my big question is that it feels to me like there's like whatever sort of wall between character actor and lead existed sort of is it's super permeable now where it's like, okay, well, maybe Kristen Wiig was a character actor, but now she also could just lead a movie and you probably wouldn't be like, oh, you can't do that because you're a background player. It's like, no, everybody's kind of got, I don't know. It seems like the field is a little more open than it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, like with the rise of independent film over the last, you know, recently over the last 40 years or so, let's say, it's been going strong for a while. Like everyone who acts has their name above the title on some movie. So, you know, I don't know if it means, is it like somebody who acts like a different person in every movie as opposed to always being the same sort of star? Or is it somebody who is just always in the back or like always a supporting character but is never above the title?
Or is it always they have their gimmick and they bring that gimmick into every movie no matter what they do? Is that, I know that's like the opposite of what you do, but isn't, I mean, Slim Pickens was Slim Pickens and everything he picked Slim, right?
Right.
Right. But I don't think we would call Ryan Reynolds a character actor, would we? Because he's not really, and no hate on Ryan Reynolds, but he doesn't really populate any character that he plays. He more pulls the character toward Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
Yeah, I would say that he's the least character actor. Like, he's the closest to what we have as a star, where he just comes in, is Ryan Reynolds, and then leaves.
For better or for worse.
And I didn't say before I said that to not talk, like, not to talk shit on Ryan Reynolds. I'm talking shit on Ryan Reynolds.
And I hope he hears about it.
Well, he's an avid listener to the show, so, yeah, I'm sure he'll send me an email, and I can forward it along to you guys.
What's great about Ryan Reynolds, and I think we've already brought him up earlier in the show, is anything he says, you can just say, you got married in a place that glorified slavery. Go fuck yourself. He has no room to stand on anything ever.
And then you're like, I love you and Two Guys, a Girl, and Pizza Place, though. That was great.
Rest in peace. Loved that show.
Yeah, it was good. It was good programming.
Wasn't as good when the pizza place went away. Two Guys and a Girl, not a fan.
Yeah.
Where are they hanging out at?
Yeah.
Was that it's Two like, Guys and a Girl in a cup?
Yep.
And you don't want to know what they're doing with it. Great job. Mike, 1 point. Ryan, 2 points. And now it's time for our second game. It's time to play What's That Movie About? This is a brand new game, so we'll see how well this goes. But yeah, we'll start with Mike. So I got five movies here, and I just need you to give me a basic idea what the movie's about. Okay? So your first movie is Mean Girls number 2 from 2011. The sequel to Mean Girls. What's that movie about?
Based on the straight-to-video movies of that era, I'm guessing there's just a new wave of plastics and a new Katie has to come in and teach them their ways, but they're changing it up. She's not from Africa this time. She's from Ukraine and talks about borscht a lot.
Okay, yeah. I mean, she's from Ohio, which is the Ukraine of the United States. Sure. So yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's pretty much that. Just dealing with plastic. Got a dad who's a mechanic. And yeah, sounds pretty boring. It's a kind of ABC family movie. So great work on that. Very good. Ryan, what's The Edge from 1997 about?
The Edge from 1997? Is that, I want to say, Baldwin, Alec, Anthony Hopkins?
Very good.
Do they punch a bear? I think they go... I think they go camping and then they punch each other and then say, no, we have to team up to fight this bear. Or it might be that Anthony Hopkins and the bear team up to fight Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, it's basically, so Anthony Hopkins, I think, is a very wealthy guy with a very attractive younger wife. And Alec Baldwin is sleeping with said attractive wife. And Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin sort of are having a conflict about that while flying to some Alaskan site to take photos or whatever. Helicopter crashes. Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin have to survive together while fighting a bear. So yeah, great job. Very good.
All I remember is them like next to a river, a loud river screaming at each other. But in my memory, they're screaming the word scream. They just scream the word scream at each other.
The bear's name in the movie was Bart the Bear. Just for the listener at home, Bart the Bear. So very good. Mike, what is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark from 2019 about.
Holy shit, that came out already. So Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is based on a short horror story collection. I don't know when it's from. I know I had it. The art in the book, it was like penciled illustrations. And the art itself was so fucking terrifying. And so were the books. And I think it's Guillermo del Toro. This was a project of his that he tried to make for years. And finally did the aplomb of no one. Did not know this movie came out already.
My wife and I rented it on the video on demand to watch it because we're both big fans of the book series. Ryan, have you read those books?
Oh yeah, the art was what it was all about. But I remember reading them to my little brother when I was a kid. He was 2 years younger than me, and he would say, "Look, you can read another one, but don't do that thing where it says at the bottom of the story, scream this part really loud, because that's unfair, and you know I'm gonna get scared." And I would fucking do it every time, and he would get so scared.
the movie's all right. It's basically they, instead of just taking any of those very interesting stories and doing like an anthology film, which is what we were hoping it was going to be, it's about a group of like tweens slash young teens. I can't tell anymore. I'm getting too old to gauge how old people are any longer. But they go into a haunted house. There's a ghost there, and the ghost writes in a ghost book, and it writes all these stories about how they're going to die, and the ways that they're going to die mirror stories from the book series. It was pretty much a meh all around. Not scary, not super interesting. It's one of those, I don't understand why they put these arbitrary frame narratives around stuff that don't need it.
Yeah.
Because they somehow think, like, I'm not going to sit through a 2-hour-long movie that's actually 6 little 20-minute movies. Like, no, I'd rather watch the 6 little 20-minute movies and make them all tight and bring in different directors. Like, that's right. Cool.
Especially for him. Like, it was Guillermo del Toro Presents, and, yeah, you get a bunch of little directors. Like, that feels more his style anyway.
Yeah, than to just do kind of a very Disney-style narrative about, oh, I mean, because it felt like someone tried to rip off It. Okay. And they, you know, because they couldn't do that, they were like, well, we'll throw these kids in a scary house, and then, like, some of them will kind of die, but it was still trying to hedge on a PG-13, so nobody really died in any sort of direct way. Okay. Just stuff disappears, and it's all fine. Like, I don't need big gore in my horror movies, but those stories were generally sort of, like, haunting and really got to your core, and to have them not do that because it was just sort of like, oh, hey, the chili that your mom left in the fridge has a human finger in it. Don't eat it because the person's going to come looking for their finger, like the story in the book. It's like, I don't know. Like, these things are more interesting in a vacuum than when you, like, import them to suburbia and act like it's normal. Mike, great job on Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Ryan.
Yeah.
What's Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend from 1985 about?
All right, here we go. You two motherfuckers, especially Mike, who he basically likes dinosaurs because he thinks Jurassic Park is cool and real. But what about Jurassic Park before Jurassic Park? What if we could have not Sigourney Weaver, somebody who went away because Sigourney Weaver came in and there was no room for her anymore, find a tiny dinosaur in the jungle, and what we're gonna do is we're gonna not just use practical effects, but the fakest motherfucking practical effects of all time. Like, it's like 1970s SNL when the shark would come, land shark would come in. Like, they'll just stick a dinosaur head on from the side of the screen. This is a movie that I have seen before and do not remember a single second of it.
Yeah, you don't even remember that the tiny dinosaur is called Tynosaur, obviously.
Dinosaur.
Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend features a poorly created Brontosaurus, which isn't even a dinosaur that exists.
They didn't
so
know that then.
What are they doing? It's 1985. They can't figure out what dinosaurs will be called 20 years later.
There's no such thing as a brontosaur?
Yeah, fool. That's one dinosaur's head on another dinosaur's body. You're thinking of Atosaur, motherfuck.
Why would I ask that question in front of Mike?
You know I'm going to get mad about it.
You're not Sigourney Weaver in the film with Sean Young, known
there we
from
go.
Blade yes. Runner.
Also not Catwoman, right?
You guys also not Catwoman. Was she supposed to be?
She was told that she was going to be, and then Michelle Pfeiffer got cast, and she flipped out, and she came on to talk shows dressed in full leather garb as Catwoman, and then sort of went away from there. Like,
oh my God.
I'd probably go out from there too. Like, oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, but you got it. I don't care where your ego's at. You have to tip your hat to Michelle Pfeiffer's performance of Catwoman. It's the best Catwoman that we've had.
Not if you're Sean Young.
Well, no.
She did not handle it correctly.
I'm a Halle Berry fan.
Just taking down the cosmetics companies.
How does Anne Hathaway hold up? Was she good? I can't even remember anymore.
She was fine in a turd of a movie.
Yeah, I think that's really the problem. Is it's very much a Spider-Man 3 situation with that movie, where it's like, yeah, she could have been interesting if she was part of the movie, but she's one of 19 people who are supposed to be part of the movie.
Well, my favorite part of the movie is where Bruce Wayne and Bane dance down the street with their emo hairdos and then run into each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst part of Anne Hathaway in the movie, is she didn't choose a stupid fucking voice that would be remembered forever, and everybody else in that movie did.
Yeah, also starring in Baby Secret of the Lost Legend is William Catt, who was once in the running to be Luke Skywalker and portrayed the greatest American hero on the old sitcom.
Believe it or not.
Great. And okay, so now, Mike, what's Dead Ringers from 1988 about?
1988, Dead Ringers. All right. It's gritty New York. Everything's going fine. It's like, oh, Gen X, is it like, whatever, we don't really care. You have this stupid job we don't care about. Oh my God, that guy looks exactly like me. And then it's just like a clone v. clone attack off. Like, have you seen Jesse Eisenberg and The Double? They're just trying to kill each other's clones because who's the real one?
That got pretty close towards the end. That fucking random bullshit got kind of close towards the end.
I'm pretty good at just throwing a dart with my eyes closed.
Yeah, Ryan, do you want to talk about it? You've obviously seen the movie.
So yeah, this is a Cronenberg movie that it's Jeremy Irons. And they do the twin thing that I assume all twins do, even though I have no proof, where if they have sex with the same people. I just tell them that they're the other one. And then, but like there's one Cronenberg-esque scene where they are Siamese twins, and she is having sex with them, and that is burned into my brain forever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. very much the spiritual successor to the episode of the Treehouse of Horror segment on The Simpsons, where Bart has an evil twin.
And, the wrong twin.
You know, the left twin is always the evil one. Oh, wait. Right. No, the soul smear was incorrect. And it turns out the evil twin has been and always was Bart.
But they handled it like every family would. Just, meh.
Just life a bucket of fish heads. That's all you got to do. What, I mean, come on. Just keep them fed. That's fine. Great work on what's that movie about? You each get 3 points. You did excellent. And now, from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Française Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name. And this week, I'm going to ask you each a tough one. It's real tough. Real tough. So, Ryan, we're going to start with you. Biopic or biopic, which is the proper pronunciation? Because I hear them both, and I'm tired of trying to figure it out.
Hold on, real quick. And I've got so much to say about this, Nate, but real quick. Is this a regular segment that you have?
It is, absolutely.
Every week you do... Okay.
La Chose Française Arbitraire? Yeah, you haven't heard of it?
People who say biopic are the worst people.
Preach, brother.
People who say biopic are like, I only talk about stupid things, but I need one of my stupid things to sound smart. So I'm just gonna mispronounce a word. It's a biography picture. It's a biopic. And if you say biopic, not only are you trying to like elevate it as far as movies go, but you want it to sound like a science word. You want it to sound like, oh, we have to send this person in for a biopic. No, it's a biopic, you motherfucking marshmallow headed idiots.
I want to take the joking stance that I'm pro biopic. But I care too much about the truth.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what? Because we're supposed to assume that it's supposed to be like myopic, which is to be unable to see past your own shit.
Yes, so biopic. People who say biopic are myopic.
I thought myopic was like an autobiographical movie. That's myopic. That's not
that Johnny Cash talk about Walk the Line.
Yeah. But no, it clearly reeks of somebody like read the word, mm-hmm. mispronounced it. Somebody called him on it, and then that dude was like, "Nuh-uh, this is how they say it in fucking France or whatever.
They pushed their glasses so far into their skull and said, no, I went to film school.
here, check this shit out. Oh, God, that's embarrassing. I mispronounced it. Anyway, and then you just move on with your life. You could just say that sentence and move on with your life.
Yeah, there's somebody spends hours trying to find the appropriate. They're going to say like, hey, it is pronounced biopic, and I found a GIF on the internet that shows you that is how it's pronounced.
I hate bullying, but don't you want to do it sometimes?
So that was a question. Mike, do you have anything to add about biopic versus biopic?
No, and the people who still to this day refuse and dig their heels in and say, well, either are acceptable. Ryan broke it down. He said the two words it's based on, how do you get biopic?
Also, that's the both sides-erism, like fucking claim of people who are wrong. Both are acceptable. Those are the three words that every fucking piece of shit has at the tip of their tongue ready to say at any point that somebody steps up to them.
They're like, you're looking at there's a six written on the ground, man, but that's from your perspective because it's a nine to this guy, and that's okay. Yeah, great work on that. I'm gonna throw a follow-up at you, which is, which of these synonyms for movie is better, motion picture or flick?
I like flick. I like short and snappy, in and out, and there's something fun and not like the Academy of Motion Picture. You're making fucking flicks, brother. We're going to have fun and eat popcorn and candy.
Flick feels a little derogatory to me. It's like there's cinema and then there's porn flicks. I don't think I like flicks. And motion picture is obviously too long. But when an old person is getting into the movie they're talking about and they were like, I really love this picture because if they say picture, that's awesome. I like picture.
The old person who calls it the picture show also calls him Marty. I saw the newest picture by Marty. It was very long on my Netflix.
I mean a flick sounds like a movie that you kind of like, it's just a movie you're gonna devour, right? Like a flick is just a movie that happens to you and you don't really care. Mm-hmm. And a motion picture seems like, you know, oh, I probably should take notes.
I've only said movie ever.
Yes.
Like, I can't think of a other word I've ever used. I've never said motion picture before this moment right now. Motion picture.
Am I saying that right?
But yeah, flick is weird to me.
But flick seems like, I'm going to take the dame out. See a flick. And like, you flick your cigarette also into the person's face you're just talking to.
Then you start flipping your quarter.
Or A Bug's Life.
Yeah.
I would say that's a bioflick.
I like bioflick.
Bioflick.
Somehow,
we got...
Somehow, Mike, you just spent a moment of your life getting two people to say bioflick at the exact same time. So
I get what cult leaders feel like.
Oh, very good. Okay, great. I'm going to give Mike 4 points and Ryan 3 points for La Chose Francaise Arbitraire. And I tell you what, it's time to go into the final topic. And we have ourselves a tie entering the final topic, so it's for all the marbles. And very seriously, I have a 50-pound bag of marbles that will be mailed to the winner, assuming it gets to you. I mean, the post office is dead now, so...
How many shooters are in that bag?
It's right, 60% so shooters.
Yes! Yeah. I love a shooter.
I'm hoping Mike wins. I do not want those marbles, and I don't know what a shooter is. Although,
they're the big marbles. You never played marbles? Why aren't you from the 20s and/or why weren't you poor like me as a kid?
I was outside playing stickball, I guess. But no, like when you talk about marbles, Mike, you have that same fervor in your eyes like when you talk about pogs. So it's obviously very important to you.
Yeah.
Are shooters slammers?
Shooters are slammers, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aren't they also called like Aggies or Oggies?
I think that depends on what part of the country you grew up in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably an Albany expression. All right, so let's do the final topic. Ryan, I'll start with you. Do you have a vague idea about Michael Ballhouse?
Michael Ballhouse?
Yeah, I'll spell the last name in case I'm mispronouncing it. It's Ballhaus.
Of course I do, Nate, and thank you so much for asking. There was a time where your McDonald's playgrounds, your Chuck E. Cheese's, as they were boring pieces of shit places that nobody wanted to go to. And then Michael motherfucking Ballhouse comes in and he puts like a pit up and he puts a net around it and he just turns it into what he is. And then kids dive in and some of the kids, let's be honest, poo and pee at the bottom of the Ballhouse. But Michael doesn't care. He wants kids to have fun and be free. And if you're six and being free to you is pooing or peeing in public in a ball pit, more power to you, kid. Michael was a weird man.
That's being free to all six-year-olds, man.
Yeah, I mean, but, who can forget the heady times in the 40s when you got all your ball house designer buddies together in
yes.
the geodesic ball pit, and you just everybody was just drinking Pepsi and trying to go to the bathroom as hard as they could.
Let's all go to France. We're going to stay at Michael Ballhouse's ball house, and we're all going to smoke cigarettes and drink absinthe and just create and write and come up with the greatest ball houses that anybody's ever seen before. And that, Nate, is Michael Ballhouse.
Right on. Mike, do you have a vague idea about Michael Ballhouse?
Wait, hold on. Nate, do you know the right answer?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that sucks for me.
Michael Ballhouse was, of course, the lead singer of the Bauhaus. And after he got sick of making music, he grew up, you know, in the Velvet Underground post-beat scene. He was hanging out with Andy Warhol a lot and saw what Andy was doing with art films. He's like, what if these had a dash more plot? And so he started making art indie films. And yeah, it just grew like a cult following, never really made it big for everybody else.
All right. Yeah. I mean, you're both wrong, which is fine.
What?
I thought if I talked shorter and quicker, it would be, oh, that guy knows.
Michael Ballhouse was a cinematographer who worked with Martin Scorsese on most of his films in the early part of his career up into the early 1990s. He was the cinematographer for Goodfellas. He was a cinematographer for Last Temptation of Christ, as well as a movie that you guys did on the show.
After Hours.
That's the name of it.
You know what I love about you, Nate? Super awesome. Super awesome show, super awesome host. You're like, oh, these guys think they know a lot about movies. Let's bring them on, and then I'll prove that they know nothing about movies.
They don't know dick about movies.
I don't even know who fucking Martin Scorsese is, so this is embarrassing all around.
Oh, Marty? He's got the eyebrows. He was in Ants.
He was. He was the lead ant in Ants. After
that was Woody Allen.
Yeah, that was Woody. Yeah.
Well, I guess we erase him, so yes, Martin Scorsese was the number one ant in Ants.
Okay, so we don't know who Michael Ballhouse is, but if you have us on, one of us will bring up Bug's Life and the other will bring up Ants. That's
the energy we bring.
Next time, Armageddon and Deep Impact. We're each going to bring up one.
Ryan's Madagascar, I'm over the hedge.
I am Madagascar.
And I am over the hedge.
So yeah, you guys, I'm giving you both 2 points for that final question.
Because
you both BS'd some very funny things. I think that's what's important. So right now, the scores are 22-22.
Oh, shit.
Now I can throw a tiebreaker question at you if you want. Or you guys can just walk away today as friends.
Tiebreaker.
Tiebreaker. I don't want to share anything with this guy, especially not this award.
Okay.
Can I get a ride home though, Ryan?
Yeah, if you take my bag of marbles home with you, you can have a ride home. And what did he say? A 35-pound bag of marbles?
I think so, yeah. So I'll just lift.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be awkward. Plus, the bag is already torn. And you're legally not allowed to get any other kind of conveyance. So you're going to kind of have to try to, you know.
And I love the fact that like, Mike claims to, like, oh, be a marble player, as if that's a thing that you can, like, that it's an actual game that you can play. But he's already revealed that he breaks ornaments up and puts them next to the door. These are clearly for robbers to slip and slide on as they enter his house.
Look, you're two kinds of people in the world. You're either a little kid playing hilarious, dangerous pranks, or you're a robber who deserves those pranks. And Nate, I will never not be that kid.
If the prize, Nate, was a paint can tied to a rope, then Mike would have tried so much harder.
I mean, I think we all would have. Who wouldn't like just to freshen up our indoor spaces right now when we're trapped inside them?
See, you're such an adult. You want to use the paint to like make your house better. We're worried about robbers.
Well, I will do both at once. I will swing the paint on the rope straight at the wall to see what shape forms.
I assume that Kevin poured the paint out responsibly into like a 5-gallon bucket, filled it with water then, or sand, and then threw it
marbles.
At Daniel Stern or maybe marbles. Okay, so here's your tiebreaker question. You're both familiar with the film The Arrival of a Train at Chiotat, which is the Lumiere Brothers film where a train arrives at a station. And a bunch of people are like, oh my God, a train, it's going to kill us.
We have a show called Movie of the Year. but there really is only one movie of all time. There's only one Moda, and it is The Arrival of a Train at the Station.
That was the first movie of the year.
If you guys do 1896, it's going to be a real special show.
It's going to be that and the horse running in place.
What is the acceptance speech from the guy who filmed that? Like, taking his award. Just like, I don't know, I saw a train, I wanted to film it.
I see a train, film a train. Thankfully, the awards were also silenties, so nobody has to listen to it. He just waves his arms up and down very quickly, and then there's the title card says, thank you.
Title card, yeah. Or the title card just says, oh, the orchestra's playing, I guess I have to get off.
Yeah, go home. So what I'm going to throw to both of you is, how long was that movie? And the person who was closest will win today's game. So Mike,
PIR rules?
Yeah, we'll do Price is Right rules. That's fair. Closest without going over, how long is The Arrival of a Train at La Ciotà?
7 seconds.
Okay. Ryan?
8 seconds.
All right, Ryan, you win. It was
It's so much longer than that, right?
It was 50 seconds long.
Yeah. Oh.
Almost a whole minute.
Open a film book, Mike. Learn about history. Jesus.
I always skip chapter one in film book.
The fact that you call it film book, I think, tells us everything we need to know.
I just want to be like, what are the Duplass brothers up to?
I mean, they should remake this, because a mumblecore version of that train showing up, I will sit through 4 hours of that. 100%.
So much middle-class white male NY.
I want the Duplass brothers to sit around the train and talk to it, but I want the train to be played by Larry the Cable Guy in full animation. I just want to see that movie happen.
I mean, I think he's probably free, so, and he probably won't care. He'd work right now, I bet, too. Just kind of based on my cursory understanding of his political leanings.
My God, not only is he not funny and has super dated comedy, but also Cable, nobody wants anymore. Mm-hmm. So that guy's fucked on so many levels.
Yeah, Larry's stupid name. His grandma's still covered in moles, probably.
Unfortunately, this is the part of the show that I love the least, because one of you is a winner, and that means the other of you is a loser. But I want to stress, Mike, that you're not a loser in any sort of smash mouth, L on the forehead sort of way. You're more of a loser in the very temporary, you didn't quite know as much as Ryan did tonight on the show way.
Which just sucks, because every week I'm told that on Movie of the Year. I hoped that I could get one day of knowing.
I mean, at least this time,
maybe I could be a winner.
At least this time the points weren't so far stacked against you. You literally lost by a single point. It wasn't a 40-12 sort of trouncing as occasionally happens on that show. So, Mike, what would you like to plug this week? What do you want the listeners to know about?
If the listeners liked me and Ryan talking, I think they will love a little show called The Superhero Show, where Ryan and I are led by our intrepid leader, Cassie, and talk about every single live action TV show based on comic books, The Superhero Show, wherever you get your podcasts.
So interesting development in the Superhero Show world, which is we're going to have a new Batwoman.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Great, because Ruby Rose can't act.
I mean, that's very equivocally true. I think it's an interesting. It's interesting because I think the new character's thing is she's like a drug dealer who becomes Batwoman. Is that right?
A drug addict? Yeah, I don't.
Nate, I'm so sorry if we could take a break and cut all this out, Mike. Real quick, just say. We're so glad to see more representation of, POCs on TV, and Ruby Rose hurt her back, and that was very harmful, and this is not the time to just talk shit on a person. So go ahead and do all of that again, Mike. Say that better, though.
Thanks for asking, Nate. Representation is great, and Ruby Rose got injured, and we're all very sad about that, but maybe she'll be okay for the sequel of The Meg.
I'm so sorry, Mike. I hate to interrupt there, but... I love when you're on a show and somebody asks you a question, it doesn't matter what it is, but you start it off with representation is great. That, like, no matter what they ask, just say that, and I think that we're good, right?
Yeah, I think so. That's the general rules.
Also, a little aside, I sort of reached whatever episode I listened to where you changed from the Superhero Hour to the Superhero Show.
Mm-hmm. Big week.
I was very confused for a moment, because I was like, wait a second, something's not right here.
This dumb name became a different dumb name.
It was like I was looking at a highlights in the doctor's office, and I was like, what is different about these two pictures? Something is up.
Like, hold on, though. We can ask you, though, Nate, because you're a podcast professional. Do you think that one is better than the other? At least makes more sense?
I think show is easier to understand. Like, our
hour. Show about shows.
The first few times I heard our hour, I thought you were saying power hour. And then
that was the common mistake.
And then I went back and I was like, okay, I get what they're saying because it's hour-long shows and it's an hour-long show about hour-long shows. I'm into that.
Nate gets it.
It's just such a weird, like, H's are just hard to pronounce in English.
Right.
Shitty.
So it sounds like hour.
It's
you know,
hour,
like, oh, you are. It sounds like hour.
We own this.
Hour. Yeah. Show. It's a show.
Here's why we're dumb, because we went from superhero hour to superhero show, when for years everybody thought it was superhero power hour. At no point did we say, should we just change it to superhero power hour?
Well, you had to pick up the Irish demographic because people want superhero show.
Yeah, everyone knows that Irish people are all about podcasts. That's
Irish
people
love the podcast.
That's the demographic you want to get.
Hey, it's not like they got potatoes left, right? So Ryan, congratulations. You have won this week with 23 points. Do you have anything that you would like to plug?
I would like to plug coming in, and Nate, I can only imagine you asking Mike to be on the show, and he's like, hell yeah, that'd be great. And then you saying, also, I would like to have Ryan on the show, and Mike being like, cool. Another fucking loss. Another loss under my belt.
Ouch.
And then it happened. It just played out. So I would like to plug high school diplomas, guys. If you just complete high school, then I think that you could do better than Mike. Mike was like, you know what? Halfway through freshman year, I don't need this shit anymore. I'm going to go shine shoes for a living. And
yeah, next time we come on a vague idea, let's talk about shining shoes, because I'll fucking mop the floor with you. Here's the thing. You don't want to mop shoes. That will ruin them. Okay. There's a little fucking hint.
First thing out of my mouth would have been, oh, yeah, you just mop them. So, yeah, right there. I'm learning stuff. So, it doesn't mean that you're stupid. You'll learn a lot about shining shoes and, like, how to, like, steal chunks of cheese from mouse traps and a lot of things that, you know, like, basic hobos need to know. But
oh yeah, you take a little stick and put that so your finger doesn't get broken. It took like 5 tries. My left hand is mangled, but just a little stick, and
or
then that cheese is yours.
And I know this sounds crazy. Graduate high school, maybe go to college for a little bit.
High school does not teach you how to wrap a bindle properly, so I will not have it.
And then Nate, if you could direct your listeners to Movie of the Year, where every week Mike and I are trying to figure out what is the single greatest movie of any given year, I would really appreciate it. And I actually, like, we're nicer to each other on that one. We're like, we're better, right? We're better people?
One of us is.
Okay, it's probably him. He's talking about him.
You are both a lot nicer to each other when Greg isn't involved. I feel like Greg puts the two of you as bugs in a jar and just shakes it as hard as he can.
That's gaslighting.
Yeah, yeah. It's dark stuff. It's very dark.
He's the worst of us.
So thank you guys for being on the show. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it. Yeah, listeners, I really want you to go to yourpopfilter.com, check out all their stuff, support their Patreon. You can get bonus content from them. That's a lot of fun. And you guys have, there's like 8 shows on your network, something like that. Six to eight shows, maybe.
Mike and I are doing the two that we mentioned, but yeah, we have a couple more floating around there.
Oh wait, there's one we used to do that's on hiatus, the OCD. We will definitely say good quality shows on Your Pop Filter are the OCD, Movie of the Year, and the Superhero Show. There are also other shows on yourpopfilter.com. Try them out.
Fucking all right, harsh.
Great.
Or narcissistic.
Hey, you know, you gotta plug your stuff. You're doing great things. And if you're in the Denver area, I know Mike, you're trying to put together some poetry and other reading events around here that can be done over the Zooms. So that's something to look out for if you want to stalk him on the internet.
Yeah, you don't even need to be in the Denver area. That's the beautiful thing about Zoom, Nate.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing about an unlivable world climate is that we don't have to be anywhere. We can all die wherever we're standing.
And real quick, too, before you guys introduce me, you guys were talking about the quad of nerdy white male bullshit. Mm-hmm. I think you guys said poetry and movies and podcasting. The fourth one, geology. The two of you should talk about like how rocks work, and then I think you have all 4 nerdy straight white male bullshit.
Look, you think it's a normal gray rock. Bro, there's crystals in this. It's a geode.
It's already starting.
It's a hint for the next.
I think there's a little bit of quartz in this. This is remarkable. So yeah, listeners, if you like this show, please find us, subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. If you give us 5 stars, that's really nice. And if you want to say some nice words about us, you can. You can say shitty words. Just give us 5 stars. You can also find our Facebook at the A Vague Idea Podcast Online Group thing. It's a fun little place where I will post zany things. We also play Pomme ou Pomme de Terre online. So if you ever want to decide whether something's an apple or a potato based on a photo I post, that's the place to do it. And yeah, otherwise we've got Instagram at A Vague Idea Podcast and Twitter at A Vague Idea Pod. Our theme song that you heard at the top of the show was performed by Michael J. O'Connor. You can find his stuff at michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. He is a talented musician. And yeah, you know, otherwise be good to each other, register to vote, Black Lives Matter, stop fucking around and wear a mask. And yeah, you know, we all had a vague idea about movies this week. And that's a good thing because the devil is in the details. Bye-bye.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page and sometimes John Peros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy books at readspaceboy.com.